Ljubljana, Bratislava, Amsterdam,
Warsaw,
Bucharest.
Hello and welcome to Network Europe, the weekly European news magazine with an unrivalled network of partner stations connecting you to the continent. Coming up on this programme, as Kosovo goes it alone, the EU sends a huge nation-building mission, but has Brussels bitten off more than it can chew?
There's no infrastructure to speak of, massive law and order problems, huge crime rates, huge corruption, so already it's a tough mission.
German taxmen go for the jugular and launch a massive investigation into wealthy tax evaders. And has Nicolas Sarkozy forever changed the relationship between government and media in France? It's all got quite bad-tempered. Plus, do you have to live
with this?
While some of us fly around the continent on budget airlines for fun, others are paying for it with their health. All of these stories and more coming up on Network Europe. Kosovo's independence was celebrated by tens of thousands in the new country's capital, Pristina, on Sunday, the 17th of February. Posters were plastered across the city thanking the US and the European Union for their support. But as you might expect, that's not the story across the border to the north in Serbia. Many Serbs are angry with the US and Europe for blessing Kosovo's independence. Well, Network Europe's reporter Dejan Ladica is in Belgrade, and he described the mood in the city to me a short while ago.
People here are very disappointed at and angry at the West, especially United States, since even the Prime Minister Koštunica primarily blamed the US and its European allies for stealing Kosovo away from Serbia. There were huge violent demonstrations at American embassy. Demonstrators destroyed several McDonald's restaurants. There is a wide frustration here. People have very mixed feelings.
Dejan Ladica there, who's himself a Slovenian. And Slovenia couldn't be much further away from Serbia these days in the political sense. It was the first province to break away from the Yugoslav Union back in 1991, and it's come a long way since then. It currently holds the rotating EU presidency and is something of a darling in the West, while Serbia remains more or less a pariah state. Dejan told me it wasn't a good time to be a Slovenian in the Serbian capital.
It's not comfortable, because right now Slovenians are not very popular in Belgrade, since Slovenia is currently presiding over European Union. Slovenia and Serbia were once, as you know, both part of former Yugoslavia. We were like brothers. And now, since Slovenia is also going to be one of the countries that are going to recognize Kosovo, they're not very fond of us right now, and these are very uncertain times. And it's going to be very hard for Serbs, who are known to be very proud people, to cope with a loss of Kosovo, or what they call sacred Serbian land.
Reporter Dejan Ladica there in Belgrade. Within the EU, opinions are divided over Kosovo's independence and whether Serbia's right or wrong to complain about it so bitterly. Critics of the West's media coverage of the move say Serbia's been getting an unfairly bad press, and arguably the country's had a difficult rapport with the rest of Europe since the Balkan Wars of the 1990s. Our Brussels correspondent Vanessa Mock told me Europe's relationship with Belgrade just got even more complicated.
It's never been an easy relationship. There's always been a lot of tensions, but now they're walking on a tightrope in terms of relations with Belgrade, because on one hand, they want to give Belgrade what they call this European perspective, i.e. open the gateway to Brussels and to EU membership. On the other hand, they're getting into a very precarious situation whereby we're actually potentially talking about a conflict on the Serb-Kosovo border, and the EU has a lot at stake here. So the relationship's very, very, very uneasy, and they're going to have a very tough time keeping it kind of on an even keel.
The EU sending a big mission to Kosovo to try and stabilise it and build some sort of infrastructure into it, isn't it? So there's quite a lot at stake for the EU's reputation.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, they have a huge amount at stake, because they're sending what they are calling their most important nation-building mission. You know, so 2,000 staff are going over to try and, you know, turn Kosovo into a multi-ethnic democracy. And that's no mean feat. Even if there wasn't the risk of the security tension spiraling and out of control already would be a very, very tough mission, given the very, very desperate state that this former province of Serbia is in. You know, there's no infrastructure to speak of, massive law and order problems, huge crime rate, you know, a lot of gangs actually ruling the place, huge corruption. So already it's a tough mission. But then, you know, you have the whole legitimacy of the mission that's at stake. A lot of countries, not least Serbia, but of course also Russia, saying, you know, the whole EU mission is completely illegitimate. So they have to make sure that now they're there to turn this into a success story.
I mean, you mentioned security issues there, and already we see the Serbs who are living in the northern part of Kosovo, near the border with Serbia, are making noises about preferring to be part of Serbia itself. Is this another Cyprus waiting to happen, in a way, a divided country?
That's what everybody wants to avoid. But I think behind closed doors, you are going to hear a lot of diplomats saying, you know, this is a long-term scenario, very possibly, for the region, because it's going to be very difficult to paper over the very deep cracks in Kosovo. And the EU mission, the people who are heading up the mission, are already saying, well, we're going to have huge trouble actually getting access to the Serbs living in northern Kosovo, because Serbia is going to basically try and annex this region. They're going to try and block it off. And there's huge resentment, of course, to the EU presence anyway in the region. So they're not going to be able to deal with Kosovo as an entire region. So it does make it very, very problematic.
Vanessa Mock from Radio Netherlands Worldwide speaking to me earlier from Brussels. The taxman's taken all my dough and left me in my stately home. Well, it's certainly not just the fledgling state of Kosovo with crime problems. Pity the poor, or soon-to-be poor, tax evaders in Germany. They're either shaking in their boots or hiding behind their lawyers at the moment. This week, teams of auditors fanned out across the country in a blitzkrieg of suspected tax cheats. It's the country's biggest tax fraud investigation ever. The names under scrutiny come from a CD containing a client list of a bank in Liechtenstein. The tiny principality of Liechtenstein between Switzerland and Austria is a well-known tax haven. The whole affair reads a bit like a James Bond thriller. There's a mysterious informant, a spy agency, large amounts of cash paid for information, as well as some diplomatic mudslinging thrown in for good measure. From Berlin, Carl James reports now.
The opening shot in this expanding tax affair took place on Valentine's Day. German agents conducted an early morning raid on the home and offices of Klaus Zumwinkel, a high-profile German executive and head of the mail and logistics giant Deutsche Post.
Nach ZDF-Informationen hat Klaus Zumwinkel möglicherweise über 10 Millionen Euro nach Liechtenstein transferiert. Dort soll
Reporters outside his villa in Cologne reported that Zumwinkel was suspected of evading around 1 million euros in taxes by funneling money to foundations in Liechtenstein, the tiny Alpine country with strict banking secrecy laws. He stepped down from his CEO post the next day. But Zumwinkel was not alone in his money management strategy. German officials found his trail thanks to a CD they acquired that allegedly contains Liechtenstein bank data on more than 1,000 suspected tax dodgers. Tax raids have been conducted across the country based on that information. Media reports say that Germany's Federal Intelligence Agency bought the CD from a disgruntled employee of the LGT Bank, who stole the information. And that set off a diplomatic spat between Germany and Liechtenstein, which accuses Berlin of heavy-handling meddling in its affairs. Prince Stefan von and zu Liechtenstein is the principality's ambassador in Germany.
Liechtenstein is a sovereign state. We have our own laws and another philosophy regarding tax law. We don't invite people to come to us to evade taxes, and I'm sure that our banks and financial service providers encourage their clients to adhere to their country's own tax laws.
But besides differences of approach, the method of acquisition of the stolen information has raised tensions. German officials allegedly bought the CD for more than 4 million euros. Prime Minister Ottmar Hasler, who visited German Chancellor Angela Merkel in Berlin, questions Germany's using information that was, according to him, obtained from someone his country considers a criminal.
It is, of course, very problematic when stolen data is bought. According to our law, that is not possible.
A poll has found that 52% of Germans don't think its intelligence agency should have bought the information the way it did. Two lawyers in Berlin are suing the German state for its handling of the affair. They say Germany cannot use taxpayers' money to reward criminal acts. A German parliamentary inquiry is now looking into the matter. But despite the population's misgivings, the tax scandal has further strengthened the sense that German elites get away with whatever they like, while the less well-off bear the burden. Christian Humborg is the general manager of Transparency International Germany.
I mean, if you ask the ordinary citizens in the street, and I just spoke with a taxi driver, and he was just outraged about what is going on there, because he's saying, what are they doing there? I don't have these opportunities. I can't bring my money to Liechtenstein. What are they doing?
German Chancellor Angela Merkel continues to put pressure on Liechtenstein to change its banking ways and to cooperate with other tax authorities from other countries. But according to some, if the tiny country did that, its economic foundation would collapse, and few in the principality are interested in that. For Deutsche Welle Radio, I'm Kyle James in Berlin.
We move east to Poland now, where some are worried about what's seen as a criminal westernization of their country. Crimes that were thought of as exclusively West European are now appearing in Polish statistics. One such crime is date rape, often perpetrated by spiking a victim's drink with a drug that knocks them out, sometimes even wiping their memory. Now a new campaign's underway to make young Poles aware of the dangers they face. John Beecham reports now from Krakow.
Poland's cultural capital also has a darker side. It's not just all churches and museums. The city's tens of thousands of students must also have a place to go and let off their steam come the weekend. Yet not everyone gets home safely after partying the night away in any one of Krakow's multitude of clubs. Date rape is becoming an ever-increasing problem and an unwelcome element in the city's clubbing scene. The only problem is, however, no one knows how many people have been drugged, as Magda Petryniak from the Manko Association in Krakow says.
We actually don't know the numbers of people being poisoned with this drug because it's unofficial. Police in Krakow don't give the numbers, and actually this drug makes people lose their memory, lose consciousness, and that's why people don't know what happened after being poisoned with this drug, and that's why the numbers are actually very difficult to estimate.
Although continuing efforts by the local police in Krakow have had some effect on bringing down the number of drugs entering the scene, still not everyone knows what the real threats are.
We believe that this problem is not known by young people who go to parties, to clubs, but we know the danger. In December last year, Krakow police caught a drug dealer who distributed this club drug, and it was the biggest delivery in Krakow so far. So we think that is a big problem. And young people don't know about this club drug. After a few minutes or hours, you may lose your consciousness, you don't know what's going on with you, and you may be a victim of a rape, some kind of threat.
The drug is so cunning that it is almost impossible to detect, with no color change or smell. I spoke to a victim of the drug, who chose to remain anonymous. So you've been a victim of this date rape drug. Can you tell me, as far as you can remember, what was it like, what happened?
It was a little bit strange, because I was a big party in one of the club in Krakow. I have a good fun, there was many people, there was many friends, but I met one man who, I think he put something in my beer, because the next day I was totally sick after that, and I don't remember everything what was happening in this night. I left my beer in a bar and went to the dance. After that, after half an hour, he gave me my beer, and after that I don't really remember everything. I remember only that in the morning my friends take me to the home, and after that I was really sick.
And do you think people in Krakow or around Poland are conscious of the dangers of this date rape drug?
I'm not sure if they are. Probably not.
The Manko Association in Krakow is in charge of promoting awareness of date rape drugs and drink spiking, and has started a campaign to try and avoid situations like the one previously described. Łukasz Salwarowski from the association.
We would like to cooperate with owners of restaurants, of bars, of cafes, to motivate them to be conscious also, because it's the common problem for owner and for the client, because if you're the owner, you don't want to have this problem in your pub.
The association also wants to promote the use of testers to check for any unwanted substances.
We're going to promote these pubs and these places where you can get or buy a tester.
Poland has to wake up to the threat of date rape, and hopefully this campaign is a first step in the right direction to make young Polish clubbers aware of some very real dangers when out on the town.
John Beecham from Polish Radio External Services with that report from Krakow. Is Big Brother watching you? Following the 9/11 attacks in the US, governments across the globe have been tightening security laws in an effort to better track potential terrorists. Sweden was one of the keener EU member states behind a push to give the police extra powers to gather information on the general public. For many, this isn't a problem, but some worry that our liberty is being eroded too far. Radio Sweden's Chris Boswell reports now from Stockholm.
Two politically opposed organisations, the right-wing think tank Timbro and the left-wing magazine Altfram, held a seminar to discuss the issues. And for once, they were in perfect agreement. Things have gone too far, they said. One of the speakers was IT expert and activist Oskar Schwarz. He says there are many ways to track everything we do.
There are so many ways, and they want to be able to register more and more, of course.
I mean, will it have a big effect on society if people do know that whatever they do, they're being registered?
If, for example, future politicians who are always scandal-ridden, or, you know, media always try to find scandals, how will they behave if they know that everything they do maybe ends up in a register? Will they be able to see the world as others sees it? Will they be able to see the material that they might decide to outlaw and so on? Will they experience the net? I'm not so sure. They will, you know, keep an eye on themselves.
And there hasn't been, I mean, that much of a discussion. There's no great big movement among the general public to stop these kind of laws. Why is that?
Well, I think Sweden is probably the country where these questions are discussed most publicly now. And there are even members of parliament of the so-called conservative liberal party, moderate party, where a number of members of parliament want to legalize file sharing. I think that's probably quite unique in the world.
I wonder who's watching me now.
Who?
The IRS.
I always feel now somebody's watching me.
But as the threat to society is changing, shouldn't legislation also change to adapt? Stefan Karlén from the left-wing magazine and think tank Altfram doesn't agree.
I know that the threats to society change, but I think that the old methods were as much effective as these new methods. And I really think, when I look to the research about the methods, that I think these mass surveillance are ineffective. A lot of resources is put on surveying people for no use. And if you really want to stop terrorists or something like that, then you should have another foreign policy, especially from the United States and Great Britain too.
Stefan Karlén from Altfram. And Maria Ranka, head of the right-wing think tank Timbro, is also worried about the recent legislation.
There are some arguments on the government side that sounds good when you hear them the first time, like those laws are for your protection, for your safety, they want to protect you from terrorists, major criminals and etc. But of course you need to think twice about all this. What will happen if this information that they collect in their surveillance systems, if somebody uses it for other purposes and so on? And I think the Swedish society lacks that kind of reflection, and people in general aren't that principled, actually.
Now, the various groups are against these kind of proposals, like this evening, are people to the right and people to the left. Why is this such an almost unholy alliance?
There are groups on the left side that are anti-authority, that is pro-integrity, and in this kind of issues they can cooperate easily with people like myself, who is more libertarian or European liberal.
Is it strange, though, to be standing on the same stage and agreeing with people that otherwise would be your opponents?
No, I think there are actually quite a few issues like this. If you look at the discussion that we had a few years ago in Sweden about the rights of homosexuals, for example, you could see similar unholy coalitions.
And the Beatles aren't the only ones getting their sleep disturbed by aeroplanes. According to a recent report, aeroplane noise may be driving people who live near airports into an early grave by increasing their blood pressure, even while they're asleep. From Radio Netherlands Worldwide, Marnie Chesterton has this report.
It's one of those necessary evils that people who live near airports just get used to. The noise!
Well, I guess when you first move into a house which is in a flight path, it's quite noisy, but after a short while, you just really don't notice it.
It really doesn't bother me at all. No.
Well, it's quite noisy. What I definitely don't like is when it wakes me up at night and it keeps me awake and then I have trouble getting back to sleep.
You'll be having a barbecue outside and your friends will be ducking for cover, but actually, as the thing goes over, every 2 minutes or so, you just block it out.
That's a selection of opinions from people who live under the Heathrow flight path in West London. So it's annoying, it disturbs your barbecues. But according to recent research by Dr. Lars Yarup from the Department of Epidemiology and Public Health at Imperial College London, there's a bit more to it. Scientists across Europe have collaborated on two recent publications which studied people living near airports. Dr. Yarup.
We looked at around 5,000 people living near six of the major airports in Europe. From the north to south, we have the two airports in Stockholm, Arlanda and Bromma, Berlin Tegel, Amsterdam Schiphol in the Netherlands, Milan Malpensa in Italy, Athens Airport in Greece, and London Heathrow. They have been living there for at least 5 years, and we found that the higher the nighttime aircraft noise, the higher the risk of having high blood pressure. We had a ambulant blood pressure monitor during the whole night, measuring blood pressure in every 15 minutes. And in parallel, we had a noise recorder as well as an MP3 player, so we could play back later on to find out if there was a noise peak on the recorder. We needed to know what kind of source of noise was. What we did find in the short-term effect study was that it really didn't matter what kind of noise it was. You did get an increase in blood pressure after the noise event, as we used to call it, even if it was an aircraft or it was a lorry going by, or indeed if your partner was snoring. So there were all sorts of noise that could give rise to that blood pressure. However, when you go back and look at the main study, included the 5,000 people, there it was quite clear that it was aircraft noise and the relation with the risk of high blood pressure. And that, of course, couldn't be explained by snoring or anything like that. This was clearly the aircraft noise.
Amazingly, you don't even need to be awake for your body to hear and react to the noise. And the study does make a clear link between aircraft noise and hypertension, or raised blood pressure. So does this study show that living near an airport damages your health? And if so, what should we do about it?
I think it is fair to say that there is a link between noise, particularly aircraft noise during nighttime, and the risk of having high blood pressure. And of course, as we all know, hypertension, high blood pressure is a risk factor for other severe diseases like myocardial infarction or stroke. So it is, of course, an important link there. If we believe that nighttime aircraft noise is a real problem, which I think this study shows, the obvious from a health point of view would be to try to eliminate it somehow, either making the aircraft quieter, if that's possible, or, of course, have nighttime flight bans, which are in place in several airports in Europe already.
Dr. Lars Yarup from Imperial College London, ending that report by Marnie Chesterton. We're approaching the end of the programme, so you'll forgive us a glossy magazine-type story, won't you? Supermodel-turned-French First Lady Carla Bruni-Sarkozy tried to put the brakes on her husband's dramatic slide in the opinion polls this week by, perhaps a little sarcastically, apologising for their happiness. since he went public with their relationship in December, 2 months after divorcing his second wife, President Sarkozy's popularity rating has plummeted. 2 weeks ago, Mr. Sarkozy filed a criminal complaint against the weekly Nouvel Observateur for publishing a text message. The paper claimed he sent the message to his ex-wife a week before his wedding to Carla Bruni, offering to call it off if she came back to him. That's the tattling out of the way. Whatever actually happened, it seems that the rather cozy relationship between the government and the French media is being challenged. In Paris, Jan van der Made reports now for Network Europe.
No day passes in France without its president or his love life making headlines, and the love-hate relationship Nicolas Sarkozy has with the French press. He is said to maintain strong relations with the owners of many mass circulation dailies and television stations. The independent press is worried about it, and I went to Rue 89, street number 89, one of the rare independent media outlets, which maintains an internet portal, and talked to its editor, Pierre Aski.
In the eyes of the public, there is a very incestuous relationship between the media and the power and the political elite. And that's very bad for the image of this profession. And that has been, of course, one cannot blame a TV journalist if she falls in love with a cabinet minister. You don't control those things. But at the same time, I think all these links between personalities, very exposed in the magazines and so on, has been very bad for the independence of the media, which is a key issue in the new era in France, particularly with the strong connections between the new president Nicolas Sarkozy and some of the owners of the biggest media in this country.
But the press is not always doing what Sarkozy wants, on the contrary. So the president tries legal means to fight back, like in the recent case of Le Nouvel Observateur, a magazine of high standing known for its in-depth political analysis. The editor of the Nouvel Obs, as the magazine is lovingly called by its readership, published an article which claimed that Sarkozy sent an SMS to his ex-wife Cecilia, saying that if she would come back to him, he would drop his imminent marriage with singer and artist Carla Bruni. The president sued the magazine, and its editor is facing 3 years in jail if found guilty for libel.
I think this is quite unacceptable and quite shocking for the spirit of freedom of speech in this country. I'm not saying France is turning into a dictatorship, but these signals are really worrying for journalists.
In the past, Sarkozy managed to stop the publications of certain articles concerning his private life, notably an article in the Journal du Dimanche, the journal on Sunday, which claimed that his then-wife did not vote. Rumor had it that Sarko gave a phone call to the editor of the newspaper, a close friend of him, and the article never saw the light of the day. This is Jean-François Julliard of Reporters Without Borders.
It is one of the reasons why French citizens today don't really trust the media. Half of the people in France don't really trust the media because they have the feeling that there are some very close links between political leaders and journalists, seeing the fact that journalists start to work with the government and former people belong to political parties are now involved in very high-level responsibilities in some very important media. But we think that it is to the media to determine what they can accept and what they can't.
Back to the president's alleged SMS to his ex-wife. What do the French people say?
Nothing really serious about it. I mean, Sarkozy can have his life. I mean, no big deal. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, my problem with Sarkozy is just the fact that he is like really a show-off and something like it, but not exactly the fact that he married Carla Bruni. That's no big deal for me.
What about you?
I don't think it's my place to judge that, because that's his private life, and that should be private.
On the streets, at least, people seem not too interested. Well, if investigators are impartial, not a guaranteed thing in France when it comes to political cases, they could call on Sarkozy or his ex-wife to hand over their mobile phones for forensic scrutiny or subpoena records at Sarkozy's phone company. Reporters Without Borders fears a dangerous legal precedent, as under criminal law the journalist would be required to reveal his sources. For Network Europe, this is Jan van der Made reporting from Paris.
Well, that's all we've got time for, but if you have time to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at contact at networkeurope.org. And that's also where you can enter this month's quiz. This is your last chance to enter, as I'll be picking out a winner on next week's show. To remind you of the question, I ask, which European monarch turns 70 on January the 31st of this year? And whoever wrote in with the answer, Fidel Castro, thanks. That was very funny. But it's not the right answer. Join me again next week. But for now, from me, Richard Walker, and all of us here on the programme, thanks for listening.
The taxman's taken all my dough and left me in my stately home, blazing on a sunny afternoon, and I can't sail my yacht. He's taken everything I got. All I've got's this sunny afternoon. Save me, save me, save me from this squeeze. I got a big fat mama trying to break me. And I love to live so pleasantly. Live this life of luxury. Lazing on a sunny afternoon. In the summertime. In the summertime. In the summertime.
My girlfriend's run up with my car. I'm gone back to her mom's park. Telling tales of drunkenness and cruelty. Now I'm sitting here, sipping at my ice cold beer, blazing on the sunny afternoon. Help me, help me, help me sail away. Well, give me two good reasons why. So pleasantly.